This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Winning the title of Top Chef is something that is beyond my wildest dreams, but also within grasp. Like, it's so close.
I want to be Top Chef because there's a big part of me that carries Japan on my back, and I want to be a stronger and better mentor and a chef.
Welcome to TV Concierge. I'm Juliette Littman. I'm the host of Bachelor Party. I am joined today by Mallory Rubin, one of the hosts of The Ringerverse, and we're here to talk about Top Chef. Mallory, how are you?
It's just great to be here with you.
I know. It is great to be here with you.
Instincts are kicking in and feel like we should start talking about Zach and Tyler C and all of our other loves, but also
Top
food.
Top Chef is one of our loves. We did a great early pandemic pod about Top Chef last year, and that's why we're back, because Top Chef is back and they're in Portland. How are you enjoying the season so far?
I'm loving it. I always love Top Chef. It's one of the great stabilizing and comforting presences in my life. And I actually was thinking about the episode we did on last season and sort of couldn't believe that that was also within quarantine, because it feels like 100 years ago that we did that podcast, but I guess it was.
I know. It was a long time ago. That was Los Angeles. And we're gonna talk about the dishes we are most excited about from this week's episode, just like personal preferences. Before we get there, one thing I really noticed, and I was curious how you feel about this. I feel like this has become a really like a West Coast show in a really interesting way. And I feel like I'm watching like the sort of like the rise of the Pac-10, Pac-12. I feel like it's like the rise of the West Coast on Top Chef. And
will Larry Scott be joining you in the second half of this episode? My goodness.
Maybe. I know that they are in Portland, but I just feel like there's such a bias towards like a West Coast way of eating and cooking and restaurant food. And I was just wondering if you had sort of like a general impression of how the show has evolved over the years. Because I don't think it was always that way.
Interesting. Well, I think that it makes sense in a lot of ways because of, like you're saying, the ingredients, the kind of farm to table movement. But I do think we've had seasons fairly spread out, right? I mean, we had Boston, New Orleans, Kentucky, Charleston, all within the last handful of years or so. But this is a more recent trend, you're saying.
I feel like it's really about the food. Like, I just feel like the food that seems to be popular is sort of like an evolution of West Coast food, where it's like very into the produce and sort of like simple ingredients. And maybe that's just because I feel like Sarah is so good and she is like the apotheosis of West Coast cooking to me. But also I feel like the Mexican influence.
But she's like, you know, not only the queen of yogurt, but that mountain town energy, right?
I know, but I feel like that's very Pacific Northwest.
Smoked yogurt. That was really something. Interesting. I don't know. I think part of what's always so fun about Top Chef is all of the different styles. I think the interesting thing about the West Coast and even just Portland as a city that I was curious to ask you about actually is, because this is in quarantine, though I will say I find the COVID protocol in the season so far confusing and difficult to understand in terms of...
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up. Well, we'll come back to it, but I want to touch on that. Okay. Ask your question.
Yes. Well, how much do you think we're going to actually be out and about in Portland? Because the Bay City is typically part of the joy of the show, and it has been fun, you know, with the guest judges, the panel of guest judges this season. Obviously, Gregory, one of the greats and a favorite here, who is a Portland chef. Just hearing him even talk at the top of the quickfire in this episode, for example, about the diner scene, the breakfast scene in Portland, like you're getting little injections of that local identity, but two episodes in, there just hasn't been the same volume that there typically would be of, let's go out to these places or cook in this field or at this festival or whatever. And of course, that's to be expected and understandable. And even in the preview for, you know, not only the entire season, but next week, it looks like they will be actually going out into restaurants. But I'm curious how you feel about that aspect of the season really being more based and anchored in the test kitchen, the home base, and obviously the panel of judges making it like this sort of consistent presence across the season instead of each episode varying more.
Yeah. So I do not like COVID content. Like, I don't like COVID conscious content. It's just like, we're living it. I don't need to see it on TV. It's not why I watch television. So I was disappointed by that in the first one, but to your point, the COVID protocol is so poor that I'm just like, okay, cool. They just don't have like a rotating judges. They have, obviously everyone's been quarantining. They come in and out as necessary. So I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm happy it's not part of the show, but I do miss like the feeling of a city, because it is really cool. Like, you know, you think of all the challenges where people either are too hot or they're like right in the sun to build a fire, or like there's gonna be no catering challenges, right? And catering is really hard. And I'm super bummed about that. I'm surprised how many people have not gotten food on the plate so far through two episodes. It's happened like more than I can remember in quite some time. But I do miss the feeling of a city. It's like my take on this, they should have done Vegas. They're gonna do it all inside, right? There's so many more venues to account for. And this, I guess they will be going to restaurants next week. They're planning to, but it's confusing.
Yeah, it does feel, with Portland in particular, like you'd love to just be out wandering the city, walking through all the food trucks, etc. I'm speaking as someone who's personally never been to Portland.
Same, never been.
My sense of how charming and wonderful it seems from afar.
Looks great.
You know,
though,
I think the other thing is, like, I just to say clearly, I love this all-star panel of judges. You know, some of my favorites, like Gregory,
Dale,
Melissa, Kwame, Dale, Blaze. I mean, this is an awesome group. Amar, it's a great group. Not just getting the, hey, this local chef who were cooking in their kitchen, and the contestants, that moment where they're like, I can't believe I'm standing in this person's presence and I get to use their oven or whatever. Like, I just love that part of it. So it is different, but it's always just still, no matter what, great to have a new season of Top Chef. It is. It's like sinking into a warm bath, or perhaps more aptly, a warm heaping bowl of polenta topped with a shrimp.
So I just want to note, Tom this week was wearing such a fucking incredible sweater.
I knew you were going to bring this up. I turned to Adam when we were watching last night and I said, Julia will be mentioning this sweater. I have absolutely no doubt.
I loved it. I love Tom. I have a weakness for Tom, and he looks so great in this sweater. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
I know. Wait, I have a question for you on the Tom front already. Okay. I'm sorry. Do you in general, both did you last night, but do you in general watch Last Chance Kitchen?
I do. I have not watched it yet. But you can spoil it for me. But I do watch Last Chance Kitchen.
A Tom experience, obviously. That's part of the draw. You get a little more Tom. He had so many terrible puns at the beginning of last night's Last Chance Kitchen. But again, because it's Tom, I just found it so winning and amusing and charming. It was great stuff. I won't spoil it for you. I'll let you enjoy it. But it was a fun one.
I love Tom. When Tom cooked in Last Chance Kitchen in a previous season, I just was so into it. I love Tom.
Oh my God. That was like a transporting moment. Absolutely. Watching him make the steak. Unbelievable.
The sauces, it was incredible.
Moving the butter with the spoon and
Tom, he's just an icon. The thing I miss the most from a non-COVID season is the grocery shopping. I didn't realize how much I love to watch them run around the grocery store.
Interesting.
It's so unfun to watch them order their groceries online. Also, as a chef, it's like, don't you want to like see what you're working with? Like, wouldn't you pivot if you're like, oh, the greens don't look that good, so I'm going to do something different. Yeah. Like that.
I found myself wondering about that. Yeah. Last night, actually, too, because there are so many moments typically when they run through the Whole Foods where they say, oh, you don't have the exact cut of pork that I'm looking for. I need to adjust in real time, or the, you know, parsnip that I'm handling isn't exactly what I need. But it won't surprise you to hear that I have had the opposite reaction to it, which is, you know what I love to do? Shop online at home.
Yeah.
This is great. This is lovely. This is wonderful. Yeah, and even you know, this particular challenge, like looking for the right brew of coffee that you want, can you find the exact sour beer that you need when you're just scrolling through? It was really something.
It really was. So at first I was like, should we talk about our favorite people or whatever? I was just thinking like, how should we approach this? But I was thinking, let's talk about the dishes we are most intrigued by and from a personal perspective would most want to try. And I will say, like, one thing that I think is going to come up this season is that we're going to be so much more subjected to like the interests and tastes of this rotating panel of all-star judges than in previous seasons. And we are already feeling that. I like love Richard Blaze. I've loved the Crack Shack in LA or in the California area, but I was so mad in the breakfast challenge when he asked for like a ridiculous order. Padmo was mad too. So I was relieved.
Yeah.
It was just like so annoying. I feel bad for the chefs that they have to kind of be subject to what the hosts are interested or the judges are interested in, but you know, it's just another kind of challenge. So Mal, of all the dishes we saw last night, which was two challenges, one was short order cook breakfast challenge, which I love. I love when they do a short order cook challenge or an egg challenge or whatever. And then the other was make a dish in partners that combines coffee and beer. I'm curious.
And that
like,
was a twist. They gamified it at the end there.
I just want to say I don't like food with coffee or beer in it, so I would not have enjoyed that, which made it all the more interesting to me. What were the ones that really caught your eye?
I thought a lot of the meals looked good. I will say that the quick fire was one of my favorite quick fires ever.
I agree. I loved it. I loved it.
Love breakfast. I just love breakfast food.
Me too.
The only thing that I didn't enjoy about it was the copious, voluminous, frequently commented upon sweating. That was an extraordinary amount of sweating, which... The food, though, I thought looked great. And in particular, I feel like this is a little bit of a cop-out to pick the dish that won, but I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I love shrimp and grits so much. And Jamie's winning shrimp and grit, which was this creamy polenta with sharp cheddar and a Cajun shrimp, looked sumptuous and extraordinary. The judges loved it. Melissa came in and she was like, that was a legit shrimp and grits. It had been Kwame's order. It was his pick. He called it a contender. He loved it. It looked phenomenal. And Jamie beat Sarah, who had been on a tear in the first episode. She beat her in the head-to-head.
Yeah, she did.
So you know it must have been just extraordinary.
Jamie speaks in sound effects is also what we learned from that. When she won, she was so overwhelmed that she was like literally, it reminded me of like a Pixar character or something like that, or something that would have been in Soul or Sal. As Tracy Morgan said at the Golden Globes, Jamie seems like really good. This Tom said this, but this seems like a really talented group of chefs, like just really better than usual. No, I wonder also if that's because there's more chefs available because like so many restaurants were closed.
That's the sense that I got. Yeah. Because you've heard a few of the chefs mention, I mean, obviously very upsettingly having to shut down their restaurants. And then, you know, you've heard other people talk about how long it's been since they've been in a kitchen or been around other people. So it definitely seems like that's fueling the candidate pool.
Yeah. So Melissa asked for dim sum, which is bold. And I was thinking, you know what? I'd love to have soup dumplings for breakfast. That sounds great, Melissa. Good pick. And
Melissa's an icon. That's my take on Melissa. Love her.
She's awesome. Shoda made a mochi and it looked fucking awesome. I think I love Shoda. He's like definitely my crush of the season. Shoda and Chris, those are the two that I'm just like, you guys seem incredible. Chris, extremely handsome. from New Hampshire. How often do we get a New Hampshire man on television, let alone Top Chef? It was a kind of a coming out party for Shota this week. He seems really, really talented.
He's also involved in my next pick in my top three dishes here. The Shota Avishar lobster dish that ultimately won. Again, I'm sorry for picking the winning dishes. They won because they looked great and apparently they were. This one, I thought, sounded revelatory. Double cream coffee stout reduction. That alone, I could just drink that. That sounds like something I want to fill up a coffee mug with and luxuriate in for an entire morning. And then you add lobster, which I have personally been craving a lot lately. And, you know, you hear both at the table and then at a judge's table later, everybody talking about the balance, the originality. And I love those moments where when you're hearing what the chefs are going to prepare and you think, huh, that sounds new. And then Tom validates that instinct. That always feels good, right? When he praises the originality. Kwame was like, my plate is empty. Melissa said it just sung to me. That looked wonderful and was the thing I wanted to eat the most of anything in the episode. But there was something else I loved about it too that put it in my top three. The bond that developed among the chefs. This beautiful thing between Shota and Avishar, because Avishar had a tough first episode and he was not feeling confident. And it was honestly really lovely to see that moment at the end where they sort of thanked each other, and seeing Avishar find that confidence through that partnership was just lovely. And of course, we had gotten to know Shota a bit more throughout the episode, hearing him talk about his struggles over the past year. It was just actually really moving. And that's one of the things, obviously, that's also the magic of Top Chef. It's not just watching the food and thinking, oh, I'd like to eat that, or can I go to this person's restaurant one day? It's getting to know the people and their stories, which I love.
You love. I'm glad you mentioned them, because I think that also one thing that this challenge in particular made really clear, which is a huge thrust of Top Chef, is this tension between like avant-garde, forward-thinking food and technique versus completely nailing a really straightforward, simple meal. And I don't want to call it basic, but like simple. And I was really interested in the ribs and watermelon, which was a collaboration.
That's my next pick.
A collaboration between Don and Gabe. Yeah. And so first of all, I'm so happy that they didn't lose. I was really worried they were giving us this edit, like the conflict edit, and like one of them was going to go home. I'm so glad that wasn't the case. They both seem like they have a lot to offer.
But the thing is, we knew who was going to go home, because the Top Chef edit always tells you.
I know. As soon as you feel comfortable, you're out. Well, you're out. But we won't say, because maybe you'll watch the episode, you know? But I just loved that they were up there alongside the other guys, because it was like really the yin and the yang of Top Chef, of like, do you go for like beloved comfort food done really well, or something totally unique and creative that no one else has thought of? I will say usually unique and creative wins in the end in the final challenge, but I feel like the way they get to the final challenge is by nailing food that people love. And that's what Don and Gabriel did. Gabriel worked for Tom in New York, which definitely gives him a leg up, but it also seems like he's an awesome chef who knows how to do really good food. And Don as well.
He's certainly confident.
Certainly confident. But he did let Don do.
Don had one of the moments of the episode where she said that he was it chef-splaining or cook-splaining instead of mansplaining. That was great. And she was like, I know how to make these ribs and you're not going to tell me otherwise, which was wonderful. I thought
they seemed like they actually liked each other by the end too, which I was relieved by.
The respect that builds, because of course everybody has their own vision, and especially in a challenge like this where you're on a team, but it's only a team of two and you each have to have a component. You've got to find a way to sort of simultaneously say, this is what I know I need to make and this is how I need to make it. But you also need to find a way to communicate with your partner. Like that happened. That was the issue with the pasta with Byron and Chris, right? That Byron was like, I should have just said that I didn't think this pasta was thin enough. But to your point about nailing the classics, nailing the thing that people love, I thought that what was really cool about Don and Gabriel's dish is that it still had these really elevated and original elements. Like the
techniques were original and unusual.
Sour beer, compressed watermelon. Kwame said it tasted like candy. I personally just love everything that was on that plate. Like, I love ribs. Oh. I love watermelon. And sour beer is my favorite. I love sour beer.
I've never had really sour beer. Never even heard of it.
What?
I don't drink beer, really.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, sour beers are great. You probably wouldn't like sour beer if you're not much of a beer drinker. I know. You love. We know. The Juliet. Splash of pineapple. We know. Sour beers, I just love them. And so thinking about what the flavors and textures of that dish would have been just really excited me. It seemed like a wonderful one.
Last question. Who do you hope wins?
Currently, I think I'm most invested in Shota winning. He is my favorite so far, though. I like Sarah a lot. Gabe, not Gabriel, who we were just talking about, but Gabe, I think seems
like a really good
strong
chef.
Yeah. Lot of talented. I mean, as Tom said, and as you just noted, a lot of talented chefs. It's, I think, more difficult than usual 2 episodes in to say, oh, this is the clearly 4 or 5 best chefs in the bunch. It seems like we're going to need to get halfway through the season before we can really identify who will be there in the end.
I think I'm pulling for Gabe or Shota, but I don't know. I like them all. It's a fun season so far. Everybody, check out Top Chef. And if you do love Top Chef, Chris and Andy are covering on The Watch on Fridays. So listen to The Watch. We'll be back with more TV Concierge on Monday. Thank you so much for listening.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.